You are listening to the Team Flower Podcast, where we talk about flowers with the people who've dedicated their lives to sharing them with the world. We believe that our guest and you are making an impact in the flower world, that your work with flowers matters. And so we just wanted to say thank you before we start today's episode. Hi, my name's Kelly, and today we have Nikki of Flourish Flower Farm from Asheville, North Carolina, joining us. After years of working in outdoor education, Nikki finally turned the dream of becoming a farmer florist into reality. As the daughter of a landscaper and tree farmer, you could say that Nikki's love of plants runs in her blood. She loves gardening, nurturing, and creating beauty. Her husband, William, spent his childhood helping his grandfather tend a giant vegetable garden, and he is the master of farm maintenance tasks. Together, they balance a love of nature, hard work, creating beauty, and spreading joy at their farm. In this episode, you'll hear about Nikki's transition into flower farming and how she and her husband found their farmland. We're chatting about the process of starting a small business and tips and tools to go about doing so. So whether you're dreaming about being a flower farmer, or maybe you have already been through a few seasons and you've got some questions about soil amending or expanding, we've got encouragement for you in this episode of the Team Flower Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Team Flower, an online support community dedicated to educating, connecting, and empowering flower lovers worldwide. We provide online classes, in-person events, and free weekly resources like this podcast designed to support you in your journey with flowers. Whether you're a professional florist, flower farmer, or just love flowers, there's a place for you here. Come join the party at teamflower.org. Well, Nikki, welcome to the podcast today. It is great to have you here.
Kelly, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
Well, tell us a little bit about Flourish Flower Farm. Where are you located?
Yes. So we are located in Asheville, North Carolina. So we're in the western mountainous part of the state, and we love it here.
Yeah. So Nikki brought flowers at, I can't remember exactly which year it was, one of the years that we hosted a workshop in Asheville is where I met Nikki for the first time. Yes. And then I just saw you at the ASCFG conference that was over in Raleigh recently. I think that's the last time that I got to see you.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, tell us a little bit about how you got started.
Yeah. So Flourish is really a dream come true of mine. It took me a long time to get started, probably like a lot of people in the flower business. We all have different life experiences that brought us here. But my background is, I guess, even starting as a child is in plants. My father had a tree farm. Actually, I think he still helps a friend with a tree farm and had a landscaping company. And my parents were gardeners, really, really avid gardeners. And so I think I just grew up around plants and it was always a part of my life. And then, you know, I went to college, and after college, I really got into outdoor education. But kind of in my off seasons from leading wilderness trips, I would volunteer, actually I apprenticed first on an organic vegetable farm. And we grew cut flowers, and I think that was like the very first seed that was planted probably, oh gosh, almost 15 years ago. And then, you know, different parts of off season, I would go and volunteer on farms, and people kind of ask you, like, if you could do anything in this world, what would it be? And I always said I would just grow things. I didn't really know what that looked like. But then I think I hit 30. And I had sort of a, I'm not going to really call it crisis, but it's sort of like this identity shift of I had been leading wilderness trips for so long and I was ready for something different. And so I kind of went back to my roots, no pun intended, of growing things. And so really I just like, I kind of became obsessed with the idea and started talking to my husband like, I really want to have a flower farm. And it was this really kind of deep belief that like this is what I needed to do. And thankfully he was supportive of me starting this and quitting my job. And we wrote a business plan and so started it with a lot of intention, but I feel like it was kind of a long road to get here, but this is exactly what I am meant to be doing with my life. So it's a really neat feeling.
That's awesome. Well, and it makes me really excited to hear you say that you started with a business plan before you really jumped in and went for it. I think that that's a really important part of the process, and not one that, you know, maybe people have never even heard of a business plan before, or, you know, don't know what the components of that look like. What did that look like for you, and where did you kind of, did you talk with the Small Business Development Center in your area, or what did that look like, your process of getting that on paper and getting the dream written down and revenue streams and all those kinds of things.
For sure. It's like, will I have a place to sell these flowers? And so I'm really grateful. A big part of my background is in running a small business. So I was really familiar with budgets and profit margins and even how to set up an LLC and maintain it. And so I'm grateful for that, because actually running this company like a business is a really, I mean, it's our number one priority. Yes, I have to grow flowers, but this is not just a hobby. And William, my husband, he also runs a business. And so I think kind of together, the two of us were able to write that plan. I used some templates from, I want to say, like our local score. But I started to feel overwhelmed with the amount of resources available for starting a small business, which seems like a silly thing to say, but there's a lot of them out there. And then to kind of weed through everything and actually find a starting point, it took me a little bit. So really, I just kind of found some templates of like, what are some of the topics that I should cover? And then found some good spreadsheet templates to work on our financial projections. And almost 4 years in, and I really need to revisit the original business plan. I haven't yet, but the finances are something that I look at multiple times a week.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And like the business plan aspect of it, like you were saying about like revisiting it now that you're kind of 4 years in, it is a living document. And I think that's important to note, that your business is something that's alive and it's breathing and it's growing and it's going to shift and change, and market's going to shift and change, and you're going to learn things in that process that you're going to want to maybe edit some stuff out or add some stuff in. Like, there's a chocolate shop here in town that my sister and I were at yesterday, and they used to have a kind of, you know, elaborate bakery with all of these really fine chocolate kinds of desserts. But they're in a market where if they were in Brooklyn or they were in, you know, some other kind of more metropolitan, I feel like, type of area, this little side of their business would just be booming. There would be people there all the time. Mm-hmm. But this is in a different kind of market where people are used to eating Hershey's chocolate, and that's what tastes good to them. Instead of this like really fine, you know, chocolate. And so I noticed when we went there the other day, I hadn't been in quite a while because it's up here where my parents are. And I had one of their amazing, amazing brownies, but they only had amazing, amazing brownies and amazing, amazing cookies and some little, you know, coconut macaroons. And they had really discontinued a lot of that elaborate side of their business. And baking and all of those things takes a whole, whole lot of time. They figured out what their most popular items were. They still sell those items. The people that come in that are regulars are still happy. That's what they would buy if they came in anyway. And I thought, oh, I wish all of those other things were here too. But I really respect that, because that to me, as somebody kind of peeking in around the corner, I'm like, that was a smart business call. You know, there's never a lot of people in here at one time or anything. So paying attention to that and just kind of moving and shifting throughout the process, I think is really wise and smart. So it'll be fun. I'm interested to chat with you after you've had a chance to review it, to see kind of what you feel like stuck and what you feel like didn't. And I mean, gosh, my first business plan was it had a lot of revenue streams in it. And so I went from having a whole bunch to having very few, but now I've actually started building it back out again once I've kind of streamlined a revenue stream. And then you can kind of build it backwards, which I think is kind of fun to be like, oh yeah, like I always thought that would be kind of neat to do or whatever. It's like just a nice guide. I love business plans. Can you tell? But anyway, yeah. Well, that's cool. That's really awesome. Financial support for the production of this podcast is brought to you by Team Flowers Business Foundations, an online class. It's designed for anyone looking to start or streamline a wedding florals business. In this comprehensive course, we'll discuss getting started, drafting contracts, estimates, and proposed healthy client florist processes. We'll also cover business plans and income projections, sourcing supplies, building a portfolio, and so much more. If you're just starting out, this course will equip you to start your dream business on solid footing instead of doing hours of guesswork and making all of the common mistakes. Or maybe you're already pursuing your dream, but you're feeling a little flustered on this business side. This class is for you too. We'll guide you through getting your products and policies in place so you can focus on your customers and doing what you do best, creating beautiful designs for them. In addition to over 6 hours of instructional videos, this class also includes 16 helpful business documents like a sample proposal and contract, budget planning guide, and cash flow spreadsheet. If you're ready to build the flower business of your dreams, you can find out more at teamflower.org/online.
Fun to learn what works for my business, what works even for my personality, and you know, what I enjoy doing as mostly a one-woman show. Like it's been really kind of fun to think back on all the different things I've done and where I've sold my flowers to what we mostly do now. Yeah. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Well, what do you mostly do now?
That is sort of the most interesting thing to me. Mostly we do weddings now.
Oh,
and
okay.
I started off saying I didn't want to do weddings. I had kind of always just done wedding flowers like on the side for friends and my own wedding. But when I really started this business, I was like, I don't really want to have anything to do with weddings. So I thought that farmers markets and a CSA were going to be really big, and they're not. I did a farmers market for 1 year. It did not work for me. And I did a CSA for probably like a year and a half. It also didn't work for me. And then the weddings just really organically grew. Like people just started asking. And I found that I really, really loved it. And for me, that was sort of the missing link. In my opinion, like when I started this business, I was just so focused on the growing side and not necessarily the creative side. And for me, that's been one of the biggest joys in having the farm is being able to use what I grow to design with. Mm. And I don't think I could have one without the other. So I'm really kind of surprised when I think back on when I started it. I didn't think weddings would be such a big piece, but I'm really grateful that they are.
Mm. Yeah. And I love that you tuned into what was kind of happening naturally. You were aware enough to kind of understand like, hey, this thing that I didn't think about before is really starting to go. Like maybe I should pay attention over here. And I don't know about you, but sometimes once I get something going and I get it, you know, I can get kind of bored. But I was, I'd be like, I'd get that one part. I don't know if there might be somebody listening who has a similar kind of personality trait perhaps, but I would maybe get like the weddings, you know, going really well or whatever. And then I'd be like, and that would be like the cash cow of the business. I'd be like, where the money is coming from. And I'd be like, oh, I'm kind of bored with this. Like, what can I do now? And then I would do something. I would like be really tempted to do that other thing. And it's fine if you can figure out how to you've got to keep the cash cow running though. That's the really important piece of it. And that's what I love so much about Jesse is we've been doing business and life together. He's like, we can't kill that cash cow, Kelly. even if you're bored, we can't kill that one. We're going to keep that going. And, you know, we'll figure out a way to for you to get some of this curiosity out.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's sort of how a lot of things in the business have happened. Yes, I started with a plan, but it's really been like trying to pay attention to what people want.
Exactly.
So workshops, like just really small little workshops on the farm have become a really important part of my business. And And it happened because people were asking to come to the farm. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, I wasn't set up for that on a daily basis. As much as I would love to have people come out there, I can't. I don't live at my farm. I started off leasing land. And so someone else was running a business there. But I wanted to find a way for people to connect with the farm. And so I was like, what if I just offer workshops, mm-hmm. like an evening on the flower farm? And they all sold out. And I was like, huh, look at what happened just from listening to what people were asking for.
Well, and it's fun because people get to connect with each other too that love flowers. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I really love about it. Sometimes people will say, Kelly, can I drop in and come visit you? And I'll do the kind of something similar. We'll plan specific weekends because I know it's going to be so much more fun if we're like all together there at one time. And it makes scheduling super easy. So that's kind of a concept really that you hit on that, you know, regardless of what type of flower business you run, if there is that kind of interest, it doesn't have to be something that's, you know, really cumbersome or burdensome or in any way, but there, you know, you can kind of set these dates and times and, you know, really make it more official and fill that need. They're asking because there's, you know, a desire there and need there. And that's something that you can have a creative solution for. So I love that you did that. What are a couple of your favorite like evening on the farm moments, or do you have different themes for your workshops that you host there?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's really dictated by the flowers because it is on the farm looks really different throughout the mm-hmm. year. So in the spring, you know, the flowers, I know I'm not supposed to have favorites, but I do. The spring flowers are always my favorite.
I really like them too. Yeah.
But the blooms are so beautiful. I mean, who doesn't love ranunculus? And then you actually get to smell fresh ranunculus, but they're smaller. So it doesn't have that wow factor like a late summer, huge, you know, bursting sure. dahlia mm-hmm. field. It just looks different. And so trying to educate people a little bit of like, the farm is really beautiful, but you know, the plants are just, they're just smaller. Like people look around and the trees aren't green yet. And then, you know, moving into summer where honestly, I could probably just turn people loose in the dahlia field and walk and take photos and they would be happy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of neat just to like see people's reactions to how the farm looks and like the different flowers growing. And so like the format is always pretty similar. We do like an introduction, we do a farm tour, and then everybody can kind of walk around. And I have a lot of flowers ready to go, but if they kind of are inspired by a certain bloom, they can pick that bloom to use in their arrangement. Mm-hmm. And then we just make a really simple centerpiece. So yeah, even though it's kind of the same format, it's always different. Right. And I'm always interested in how people came there. Like, and I would say overwhelmingly, the people who come just love flowers and they want something beautiful in their life because there's not a lot of opportunities for people to just go to a flower farm and, you know, learn something and have access to just buckets full of gorgeous, pretty high-end flowers. So, you know, we tend to focus on growing wedding flowers. And so they're like, we can use all of these. I'm like, you can use as many as you want. So it's kind of like a kid in a candy shop for attendees.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about the growing of the flowers and the land a little bit. So originally a cattle farm is what you were on whenever you got started in that transition process. Walk us through what that was like and how you transitioned that space to make it work for what you had in mind and getting all of these beautiful flowers grown.
Absolutely. So it's still a work in progress. Like I mentioned before, I started off leasing land for 2 years, and it was such a great way to make sure that the business was going to be able to sustain itself and be profitable before William and I took the leap to actually purchase land. So we were looking for a couple of years, and land is pretty expensive in Asheville in general. And it's not flat, which is really challenging right. when you're looking for farmland.
Yes.
We ended up finding a piece of land that is beautiful. And because we already live in the city, we knew we weren't going to be quite ready to live at the farm yet. So we kind of kept our options open. It didn't need to have a house, but it could, you know, we wanted that potential for the future. So anyhow, we found this piece of land. It's 28 acres and it's like 15 minutes from downtown Asheville, and it's completely raw land. The original owner, I mean, I think we purchased it from his estate. He has had cattle on there for, gosh, I mean, probably 60, 70 mm-hmm. years. And then when he passed, our neighbors started having their cattle. So it's pretty much just like pasture. And the land does not even have a road on it. So we were a little bit naive. I think now that we're fully a year in on this new land, I guess it's probably a good thing that we were naive or we never would have done it. But buying a piece of land where we have had to work on building a road, we have no water, no infrastructure, no power. It's been very challenging, but we're making it work. So we're still in the process of building a road. And so we currently have to hike everything in and out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of intense. But in terms of actually like the land, probably the first thing that I did, even before we closed, is I took some soil samples because I really knew that it was going to be a process to just physically move the farm from one place to the other. And I really wanted to be intentional about how I laid out my fields. And so getting a soil test just let me know what I was working with. And because this land is bottom land, actually has a creek that runs right next to the field, the soil is actually really, really great. And I just recommend to anyone really who wants to grow anything, get a soil test, know what you're working with, you know, what does your organic matter look like? What's your pH? So once I got that back, I knew, okay, I need to spread a certain amount of lime to raise my pH a little bit per 1,000 square feet. And the great thing about North Carolina is that they do soil test for free, but I think in a lot of states they're pretty inexpensive. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that was probably the first thing I did, is just get a soil test and then start laying out where I wanted my fields to be. And in an ideal world, all of my rows would be exactly the same length and width. And it's just not possible because I have a really small amount of actually flat farmable land. And I wanted to maximize pretty much every foot of it that I could. What I did is I just honestly got out there with one of those measuring wheels and I just walked and I flagged out my fields. I kept remeasuring them. Because I grow in landscape fabric, I knew that I wanted them to be at least square or rectangle in shape just so I could fit the fabric. And then once I had my fields laid out, then I knew I could start amending the soil because I didn't want to spend money to spread lime on what would be a pathway. And so my plan, which is now that it's been a year on this land, is each year I can cover crop and I can keep track of what amendments I add to each field every single year or every season. So I have them kind of drawn out in one of my notebooks and labeled like, this is field 1, 2, 3. Here's my hoop house, 1 and 2. And then what have I added? Okay, I spread 50 pounds of lime on this field in February. So really keeping track of what I'm doing to the soil has been pretty big priority from day one,
mm-hmm.
just because I knew I wanted to actually invest in the soil and in the land.
Yeah. Well, so. And just as you were saying about like that you spread lime on, you know, field one, I was just thinking about how from a cash flow perspective and from getting your, especially in the early days, getting yourself set up, there are certain flowers that can really handle, you know, maybe handle growing in less than perfect conditions or something like that. And really the soil is, getting the soil where it needs to be can be kind of expensive.
expensive, really expensive. That's your big expense. So just, you know, if there's just one field that you can amend to be perfect in February, and then in the fall, you can get another one kind of up to speed where you want it. But in the in-between, you are growing something like, I don't know, cosmos, right, Nikki? They don't like a whole lot of fluff. Mm-hmm. They're pretty easy.
Right.
And I think straw flower, I tried to grow straw flower in like a really well amended bed as well. And they just were like, we're not going to do anything. I threw them in like a terrible location. And they were just like, I'm like a week later, they started blooming. Like they were like, it's so great over here. There's different things like that, that you can kind of strategically think through your spending for the year, if you feel like that could potentially be tight. So I don't know what your thoughts might be on that. I'm not a farmer, but I was just kind of like, you said that and it just kind of triggered that, like, oh, what do you think? Could that be possible or a way to manage if somebody had that as a problem?
For sure. For sure. I think you certainly could, especially if, you know, you don't have, you know, the resources to say, you know, add compost to, because compost can be really expensive to all of your beds. Then in general, the way I've approached it is I'm going to really take care of the plants that I know either are a longer term investment, so a perennial, or they're just like a higher value crop that I know that my return on that investment is going to be a lot more. Mostly the annuals, like the zinnias, cosmos, those tend to get the not so great spot because it's just 1 year. It's, you know, it's seeds, it's labor. But the interesting thing for me this year is that I didn't really know how the land was going to work. And so I mentioned that we have a creek that runs alongside the fields, which is great for aesthetics. And that's how we irrigate when we need to, just pump from the creek. However, the creek floods. And I learned that the hard way this year. So I...
we have had a lot of rain in North Carolina.
So much rain. And I had just planted my dahlias. I thought I gave them the best field. I amended the soil really well. We had just prepped everything so perfectly. We had all that rain in May after they had just sprouted. I think we had like 20 inches of rain in 2 weeks. It was ridiculous. But anyhow, I lost almost my entire dahlia crop this year. Because turns out where the creek floods and then the drainage, I think it's actually where the cows, it was like their main route through the property. So I didn't really see it then, but that area was just low enough, like lower than the rest of the kind of pasture, that it held water. And so I just learned really quickly, and it was a really hard lesson, that that is not a good spot because it doesn't drain. And so this whole year dealt with drainage issues. And ironically, like where I thought I was putting my annual field, that it wasn't the greatest spot. It's just high enough ground that it didn't flood. And my annuals were amazing this year. I probably had the best crop of zinnias that I have like ever even seen. They've just thrived. So, you know, just keeping track of those lessons. And I have a notebook that I write in almost every day, at least weekly, just about what I'm seeing around the farm. Some lessons, like the dahlia field from this year doesn't drain, I will never forget that. But it was a really expensive lesson. Yeah, it still kind of breaks my heart. But it's just nice to look back.
Yes. Well, and you spend so much time like collecting all of the varieties that you know, that you really loved, or I don't know. It just, that is really heartbreaking. I'm so sorry.
I know. It's one of those things I'll never forget. Yeah. So, but thankfully we actually talked to our accountant about it, and kind of back to like just trying to be business minded, I could have gotten really depressed, but William was like, you know, we need to talk to our accountant about this, you know, this loss that we experienced. It turns out because there's been so much disaster around the country this year, and actually maybe someone listening, this could help them. There are disaster loss programs set up almost in every state, because pretty much everywhere this year has had some sort of disaster. Mm-hmm. And so I can actually take the cost of all those tubers and it can be taken as a loss at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same as it was still thousands of dollars, but that sort of softens the blow a little bit, knowing that, you know, the government is giving a little bit of relief. And our accountant, I don't know the ins of what she'll actually do, but I just know that it's not going to be a total loss.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you shared that. It's definitely something that I wouldn't have known to ask about or think about or know.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Right. Because we think like only these really big farms can have aid or like, and not that it's aid, but it's nice to know that something can be helped for the little guys too.
Absolutely.
Financial support for the production of this podcast is brought to you by Team Flowers Foundations for Growing Cut Flowers online course. This class is designed to help you start your growing journey on solid footing. This class is perfect for beginners or those who have tried growing flowers before but haven't been successful yet. People aren't born with a green thumb. It's something you have to cultivate. In this class, you'll learn how to set up your space for seed germination and care. We'll demonstrate planting and watering so you can be confident you're doing it just right. You'll be guided through an entire year in the life of a cut flower grower and learn tried and true principles to take the steps from seed to bloom and beyond. Whether you'd like to start a career in growing specialty cut flowers or would just like to look at beautiful blooms in your garden, you are welcome here. If you're ready to experience the magic of growing your own flowers, you can learn more today at teamflower.org/online.
You said springtime flowers were your favorite flowers. I was wondering if you had like a couple favorites. Maybe probably most of your spring things perennials, or do you have anything that you're...
I do. Yeah. Mostly annuals, honestly, because leasing land, I didn't want to plant things. Yeah. So, which now I've started planting things since we finally have our own farm, but I think ranunculus will forever be my favorite. They just are so beautiful, and their smell, it's like when you ship them in or they've traveled very far, it doesn't have the same scent, but it's almost like this sweet citrusy, oh, I don't know. They're just kind of magical. So
that's awesome. Yeah. No, I think that's really great to note the scent on those, because I've only had them a couple of times, like fresh from the farm, because I don't do a whole lot of springtime work in the mountains. And so usually when I need them, they have to come wholesale at a weird time of year that they're not really, you know, they're not locally growing or whatever. And so, yeah, I forgot about that. I forgot about that really distinct shift in the scent. That's really special.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Well, do you have one, if you had one tip about ranunculus, maybe something that you learned the hard way, or maybe something that you read somewhere and apply that you feel like really worked well for you, what would that be for that particular flower?
Yeah, I would say soil prep, just really making sure that you have a good spot for them to go in. I already knew from my old farm that they did not like to have wet feet, which is a pretty good rule of thumb for a lot of flowers. They just don't like to be in water. So I always make sure that I slightly raise my ranunculus beds just a little bit. And then I give them a lot of, as I'm prepping the soil, compost, and then some organic fertilizer based on what my specific soil report says. Mm-hmm. And then one thing I did learn the hard way, it all depends on your kind of climate, but because I mentioned I grow almost everything in landscape fabric for weed pressure, ranunculus do not like to be in landscape fabric. It's just too hot. And here in our part of North Carolina, we kind of go from cold winter to 80 degrees. It can jump really quickly. And having them planted in black landscape fabric just increases the temperature so that they give up. And so after my first year of them, I had beautiful blooms. I just didn't have them for very long. The last couple of years, I mean, they just keep pumping out blooms for months. And in terms of like, you know, the bulbs can be expensive, the corms. the return on those, I mean, the amount of stems that you can get from a healthy plant is pretty unbelievable. So I would just say, don't plant them in fabric if that's something that you use on your farm, because they won't stay blooming for nearly as long.
Yeah. Well, and that tip about raising your beds and the wet feet, I think that's really important too, because they have to work to go find water. That's what helps them to really flourish underneath the things that we can't see. So I think that that's really great advice as well. Well, as we start wrapping up today, something, maybe a word of encouragement that you might have to somebody who's maybe just thinking about starting out, and then maybe a word for somebody who's in the throes of it and is like, whoa.
Yes.
Whoa. Yeah.
Whoa. So I would say, if you're just thinking about starting out and want that dream of being a flower farmer, start small. Choose maybe like 5 to 10 types of plants per season. And just start with that. I started with hundreds, and it was just too many. Every single year I scale back. So my advice would be, start smaller. It's less labor. It's less overhead. You can really, really learn those plants and how they do in your climate and in your soil. And then you can hopefully grow them really well. So choose, just a few of your favorites, and then succession plant them. Don't just plant zinnias once. Plant them 3 times throughout the summer, rather than trying to do.
I have such a hard time pulling them out.
Oh,
you know, like the first one, and it's just like, Kelly, you gotta let them go. Just like pull them out.
They're done. Yeah.
Every flower farm, it's kind of like, for florists, it's like, oh, I can't throw that away. You know, you never want to throw away that one bucket of extra flowers, but then it rots in your cooler for forever because you're just too tired to get to it or whatever. And I feel like for me, being new to the flower growing side of it, I'm just like, oh, but I can't throw that away yet. And every flower farmer I talk to is like, just rip it out.
Just rip it out. I know.
Just throw that bucket away.
Yes. Just do it.
Okay. And then what about somebody who's like in it and like, whoa.
Yeah. One, winter is almost here. So you can take a step back and just reevaluate lots of different things. But I would just say, you can have bad things happen, like lose your entire dahlia crop, and you can still be profitable if you have set yourself up for that. If you have good sales outlets, if you're still growing a quality product, and then just look for the positive. I know that sounds really, really trite, but there's so much of farming that is really unglamorous and really hard and exhausting. And we all think, oh, these beautiful pictures on Instagram. I mean, I'm one of them. I only post the pretty photos, but I use it as my opportunity to like take a minute and see what other people would see. Like even in the midst of the dirt and the exhaustion, it is really beautiful. And it's pretty magical what we get to do. And so I don't know, just keep thinking about why you wanted to do it in the first place and take a step back. Even when I'm harvesting, I'm like, I got to get these plants out of the field before it's too hot. I make myself stop and take a picture and just sort of reflect on what's around me, because it's incredible. And if I feel like I don't keep doing that, then I'm going to lose sort of that inspiration of what got me to start in the first place. And I don't want to lose that, because it's why I do what I do.
Yeah. Such good advice. Focusing on the positive and creating space to see the beauty and to see it through someone else's eyes that might not be in it day to day. That's really good advice for flower farming and life in general. A great note to end on for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Nikki. It's been lovely to have you here. And for those of you who are listening on the Team Flower website. We'll have Nikki's contact information and all of those kinds of things listed there so that you can connect with her. Maybe, Nikki, there'll be an opportunity for farmers to come and visit you at some point. You can kind of do like a little, I don't know, do you do anything for growers or for people who are also growing yet?
I haven't yet. I feel like that's what's next is it's kind of one of my projects over the winter is to sit down and map out a little bit of how we can do something for growers.
Yeah, so that would be really cool. Okay, so everybody stay on the lookout for that. And then Nikki, if you could just share your Instagram real quick while we're here, just in case if somebody is just, you know, kind of on their phone and, you know, wrapping up the podcast and wants to follow along with your journey, where can they find you?
Thanks. Yeah, you can find me at Flourish Flower Farm.
Okay. Perfect. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us and for all of you
Thank
listening.
You,
it's always, always great to connect and just to have this time to be together and to talk about flowers. So thanks so much for joining everyone, and we will see you next time.
If you enjoyed today's episode of the Team Flower Podcast, would you help us by leaving a rating and review? The more ratings and reviews, the easier it is for other flower lovers to find the podcast. Thanks for being a part of Team Flower and helping us build this dream together. We're so grateful.